Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and we're going to podcast with one of my favorite people on the gram. Carrie, you didn't know it, but you're one of my favorite people on the gram. This is Miss Carrie Bennett, who has multiple degrees in biology, nutrition, body work. She's been an enthusiastic educator trying to teach us all more about quantum biology and how our bodies tick, how we're connected to the light, the water, the universe. So welcome, Carrie.
Thanks, Dr. K. I'm thrilled to chat with you.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about what brought you into quantum biology and quantum physics.
Yeah, I didn't wake up one day thinking I was going to head in this route. But yeah, I think like a lot of people who are exploring alternative subjects, it was my own health journey, really, which prompted me into kind of figure out the body from a different point of view. And so I was always seemingly healthy as an athlete and a college athlete, but I just never felt like I was really thriving. Something, always a nagging injury. I would go through bouts of insomnia, and then things kind of went a little awry after the birth of my first child. And, just debilitating the fatigue and digestive issues, and again, the insomnia and some added pain. And at that point, I had really exhausted all of what I had in my toolbox before. I exhausted my traditional understanding of the human physiology through the lens of biology. I exhausted the aspect of self-care and massage and those different modalities that could be supportive. I even exhausted the nutrition, right? The idea of what can I do with elimination diets or supplements or gut healing protocols. And just, I felt okay, but I didn't feel like I was thriving. And so I knew, and I just, I had this nagging sensation that something was missing. Like I knew that I was on the cusp of like something coming to me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I found the work of Dr. Jack Cruz, who is a neurosurgeon who has really been at the forefront of this new field of what we call quantum biology. And it basically is how the body operates at the very, very tiniest, tiniest scale. Mm-hmm. And we know enough now clinically to understand how our body is influenced at that level, the protons, the electrons, the neutrons, photons, and what we can do then on a daily basis to help support our health, either from a healing or from a chronic illness, or just to feel like we're thriving. And so that's what got me into this. That's what got me into quantum biology. I started applying some of the stuff I was learning and just couldn't get enough of it. I wanted to know everything I possibly could about all of the different aspects. And so that's where the gram came about, right? I was like, maybe other people would want to know this stuff too. And here we are.
Here we are. And it's been somewhat controversial. I would say that Dr. Jack Cruz has some controversy surrounding him, right?
I would agree. I would agree completely, right? I think part of what the deal is with Dr. Cruz is what he speaks about is very much based in a lot of scientific research, but his delivery might be a little aggressive sometimes. And so what I try to do is kind of bridge that gap of like, yes, this is a new way of viewing things, right? It's not like anyone who doesn't know this right now is dumb, right? Like this should be this common knowledge for everyone right now. It's like, no, we are beginning to understand the body with more modern science that we would call quantum biology or biophysics. And really, Dr. K, what I do love about learning this stuff is like, this is ancient wisdom. This is esoteric knowledge of things like how light, our relationship with light and nature and other aspects of nature, like water and earthing, have been used for millennia to be just supportive therapies. And now we're just kind of framing it in like this new language with this new science behind it.
It's interesting because we have the big health concepts in the medical field, which is very focused on big organ systems. But the more we learn about longevity, anti-aging, and the body's capabilities, the more we go molecular level to the mitochondria, to the cell, to the powerhouse of the cell. And then I just think it's so fascinating the way you discuss how light energy and water and alignment with the electrons of your body and the earth are changing our health patterns, and we don't even realize it. Do you have something you can teach? Like, what's a good start? Nature has evolved over millions of years. How do you think nature has kind of harnessed quantum mechanics and all these cellular processes? Survival.
That's a great question. It's a great starting point because I think the the fundamental aspect to understand, and a really good entry point into this, is light and recognizing that we've had a very long time as a species to have a period wherever we live on the planet, a period of daylight and a period of darkness, and a period of daylight and a period of darkness. And that can shift seasonally, and it can shift based on our latitudes, but it's always true. It was a signal, a timing mechanism, if you will, that we could recognize that we would want to do certain things for our survival and for procreation during the day. And then we would do certain things at night instead. And perhaps that would be a good time to rest and repair. And so over the course of evolution, we've had the ability to say, okay, well, what would be a very good, what should we optimize? What biochemical pathways should we rev up first thing in the morning? Which ones should we start to activate at night? And so it turns out we developed this circadian rhythm, and every aspect of our health and how every organ functions, and then every cell in every organ has a clock mechanism in it that wants to know what time of day it is, because it's got to organize its tasks around it. It's got to say, okay, this is the morning, let's rev up these pathways and these receptors, versus it's nighttime, we can kind of shut those down and we can start turning on these other pathways. And like you said, these longevity pathways and the biochemistry is dependent on circadian timing. The body needs to know accurately what time of day it is, and then it knows which pathways that it wants to initiate. And so that's where we come into play here, right? I talk about light as the foundation and how to really get people synced up with the light, in the natural light signaling in their environment. And once we start to do that, it's really interesting to hear the stories, the health journeys that people who've been on health journeys for 10 years with things like debilitating fatigue, brain fog, Lyme disease, mold toxicity, come out of like a 3-day kind of reset, if you will, in their light environment, and feel finally like their body is not working against them. Their body is working for them. So light is the start of that. And there's so much to the light that we could break down if you want.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in our industry, we understand the concept that infrared light is so good for anti-aging and wellness and mitochondrial health, but not everybody understands that. We understand that blue light from computer screens is detrimental in terms of ionizing radiation to the skin. And then certain kinds of light, like green light, are really great for inflammatory conditions. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that. I've always heard that sunrise and sunset, the wavelength of light, is amazing for mitochondrial health. How does that work?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And so to start that conversation, it's important to kind of talk about light coming from the sun in general, because we've all seen it through a prism. We've all seen the colors of the rainbow. And so that's the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. And then there's really important wavelengths just outside of that range as well. One range that you referred to is the infrared range. And then the other one is something I think most of us have heard of, is the ultraviolet range. And those wavelength ranges of light are not static when they come from the sun. The sunlight starts and it layers on the different frequencies and the different colors of light until the sun reaches the high point in the sky at solar noon. And then the colors start to go away and their intensity starts to go away until you get to sunset. And you highlighted the two periods of the day that are just really rich and intense in infrared and red wavelengths of light, without the competition of the ultraviolet, the blue, the other wavelengths that do compete for skin absorption or skin contact, if you will. And so it is a great time for the mitochondria in particular, because those red wavelengths of light actually help to make them more efficient at producing both water and energy as ATP. And those two things, for the purpose of just cellular health in general, the hydration status of our cell and the ATP status of our cell dictates basically how much energy a cell has to donate to all of the tasks it has to do. 100,000 tasks every cell every second, which is mind-blowing to me. And so if we can make adequate energy for all of those tasks, then the cell can just do whatever it needs to do. It can adapt and change and create a thriving body or a thriving organ or whatever its job is, as long as it has those things. And so that's why the morning and the evening is so powerful for mitochondrial health, because those wavelengths are just so rich and intense, and the mitochondria can absorb those wavelengths just to benefit how they make those two things.
Interesting. And you talk about water and this form of water called easy water, how aging is dehydrating, how certain kinds of water has certain electronic organization. Can you break that down? Because they never taught this in my O-Chem class or regular chemistry class. And it's makes so much sense innately, but tell me all about water. What do I need to know? What's easy water? How do I get it? Why do I need it?
Yeah, it's great. I love it. This is my absolute favorite topic for sure, because water is just so different, like you said, than what we'd learned in organic chemistry. I TA'd it now. I think, like, how much wrong stuff did I help people with in organic chemistry? So the water inside of us, right? And the water that the mitochondria make. So at the step four of what's called the mitochondrial electron transport chain, they make water. And we assume when we hear water, we assume H2O, this molecular arrangement that I think we've all seen pictures of maybe from the fourth grade onward. And what we have to realize is that's true of when we look at water in a glass. When I look at liquid water in a glass, it's a bunch. If I were to look at it, if I were to blow it up right to that subatomic level or the atomic level, if you will, I would see one big oxygen, and I'd see two hydrogens attached to it as H2O. And I'd see that H2O molecule kind of randomly interacting with other H2O molecules in like this dance, if you will. It's like, they're never just stuck in one place. I'm going to move here. I'm going to bond there. I'm going to move there. And that's not true of the water in our bodies. And this was a big aha moment for me, because you see a cross section of a cell, or you hear the body is 70% water, and I just assumed it had the same exact properties as this liquid water in a glass.
Me too.
And it
IV, exactly.
Exactly, right? And that's true of the blood, like, right? That's true of the blood plasma. That's the water that's flowing through our veins. But the water that's actually inside of our cells, in the interior of the cell, and also around the cells in what we call the extracellular matrix, is more of a gelled water. It's water that has, like, picture like a gel, like gelatin texture or viscosity to it. And water gets that way when it actually changes how it arranges its H's and its O's. So no longer are the H's and H2O's kind of randomly connected to other H2O's and switching it off and on randomly. But instead, the H's and the O's organize themselves into what Dr. Pollack has found is a very much a hexagonal bonding. They actually make hexagons. And so with these hexagons, mm-hmm. honeycombs, exactly, this honeycomb arrangement where the vertices are oxygens and in between you have the hydrogens. Mm-hmm. And when water takes on this configuration, Dr. Pollack has called it EZ, or exclusion zone water. And that exclusion zone water has so many different properties than what we view of as liquid water in a glass. And it really truly is those properties of EZ water that run the show when it comes to so many cellular processes.
And why does the cell have easy water in it, exclusion zone water, honeycomb rings, and gel? How does that make it function better? I mean, that's an evolutionary question, I guess. But how come more people aren't aware of this?
Well, more people aren't aware of it because we really have to rewrite a lot of the textbooks, I think. I think we're getting there, right? We're tiptoeing into that area. But the research is pretty clear that that water is different. And it's in research, it's been called different things, bound water. It's been called interfacial water. So it's always been known that there was something different about it, but no one really ever made the connection that water, that easy water, it has a negative charge to it. And our cells run on charge. We run on electricity. We're electrical beings. And for a while there was some interesting math calculations. Well, we keep this charge because we pump so many of this type of ion in with this charge, and we pump so many of this type of ion with this charge out. And that's how we maintain what we would call a negative charge inside of the cell. And you could measure that as pH as well. You could measure it as membrane potential. We call it a lot of things. But it really truly means that we have this electron-rich interior, this negatively charged interior. And as soon as Dr. Pollack discovered that exclusion zone water has a negative charge, And that exclusion zone water forms around every single biological surface inside of the cell. So picture all of the cytoskeletal wires, picture all the proteins and all the molecules in this really jam-packed environment of the cell. All of that is forming exclusion zone water. And it's all of it is really maintaining this healthy negative charge inside of the cell. And the cell needs that negative charge to thrive. And when it doesn't have that negative charge, when it starts to deplete, we would call that a cell that's losing its ability to have the adequate energy needed to run all of its tasks. That's a cell that's changing its pH. It's changing, it's becoming maybe more acidic than it wants to be. And that will change the way the proteins and the organelles function inside of the cell. And it's all dependent on this exclusion zone water and the ability of the mitochondria to make the water and the ability then of the body to maintain that gel state of water, which it's not as easy to do these days in a modern environment.
And in your mitochondria, so infrared light also improves this exclusion zone water content.
Exactly.
Right?
So yes. Yes.
Interesting. So this wavelength of red light charges up the cells somehow. So our bodies are getting red light charged. We're photosynthesizing basically like a plant. Isn't that so crazy? Oh,
it's so crazy, but it's so true. And instead of splitting a water molecule, we just kind of stretch and charge and rearrange those water molecules to make this honeycomb formation. You're exactly right. And what's fascinating in terms of aging is the research shows that when you start to lose what's called this bound water or this gel water, that correlates very directly with stiffness, with pain. Mm-hmm. And so you can understand then, well, if we're going to want to maintain supple joints and supple skin, that it really does depend a lot on this exclusion zone water.
So that's where things like infrared heat, sauna, sitting in a cold ice bath, the things that trigger the mitochondria to work better, to be better battery powers. That's what we're doing when we see all these influencers doing the biohacking tricks that they're doing.
It's the unifying thread with all of those.
Exercise actually is one of the good things too.
Exactly.
What is your personal biohacking protocol? Like, are you on supplements? Do you do red light therapy, sauna therapy, cold immersions? What are you doing?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm curious.
No, that's fine. Yeah. You know, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before. So this is fun. I don't think I'm on any supplements regularly, except I take Keaton minerals on a daily basis, which is a very beautiful hydration strategy for the body.
What kind of minerals again?
Keaton, or it's Keaton minerals. Oh, okay. Oh my goodness, Dr. K, you're going to want to go down that rabbit hole because it's basically isolated. It's deep sea water that's isolated from a pristine source off the coast of France. And it's been around for about 100 years, over 100 years, but the exact mineral balance and mimics our blood plasma, our interstitial fluid, and our cerebrospinal fluid. So can you imagine how hydrating it is to have the adequate amount of water and salt in nature's perfect combination for us to consume on a regular basis to help that rehydration strategy?
Like the fountain of youth. So this place in France, we need to go there and bathe in that, right?
Well, yeah, bathe in it, or actually you drink it, right? And so go ahead. Yeah, you drink it. And so you can order it, right? The research has been fascinating. This has been very great in clinical practice because the majority of the clients I see, and I'm going to actually say all the clients I see, are unintentionally, but chronically dehydrated. Because they're indoors under artificial light, that harms the mitochondria water production. They're surrounded by non-native EMFs and wireless devices that harms mitochondrial water production. So we're really just in this chronic state of dehydration. And it's not just, we're not just craving water, that we lose minerals when we're dehydrated as well. And so it's this really beautiful thing to have this product available for people to consume that can really start to replenish the lost hydration and the lost minerals as well in the exact blend that the body wants to receive it. And so I've seen a significant changes because, I mean, this is not a well-known thing, but one of the body's alarm mechanisms of dehydration is an increase in histamine production. So my clients who come to me with things like allergies and asthma and POTS and weird rashes and sensitivities and gut health issues. For me, it's a huge red flag. We need to hydrate you first with the appropriate water and mineral blend.
So interesting. Oh my God. You and I are going to be best friends now. You're coming to visit me in LA next time you're here.
Oh, yeah. My kids would love that. My kids love LA. It'd be so much fun.
Okay. And my husband bought a crazy Kangen water thing. Is that all fake science? What is up with that?
Listen, it's not all fake science, but not all watering. What that device does is it makes hydrogen rich water, which has a lot of therapeutic potential, right? That's a whole podcast in and of itself. But what the way that Kangen machines make it is they use electrolysis, which means they actually destroy the hydrogen bonding structure of the water, which means it's water that's hydrogen rich, but not structured water. And more companies are realizing that the hydrogen matters, but the structure matters too. So they're finding different ways of essentially dissolving, stabilizing hydrogen in the water that also maintains the structure of the water.
So it's not bad, but it's not the perfect form of water. Do you think drinking a plant-based water, like coconut water that's processed through a coconut, is somehow healthier?
I don't necessarily think it's healthier. Listen, there's a whole talk on deuterium, which is way potentially beyond this conversation, but like the water in the plants are different depending on where they're located on the planet, some deuterium we need, it's a form of hydrogen, but excessive deuterium is directly correlated with mitochondrial dysfunction and cancer and things like that. And so we're meant to consume the fruits and the vegetables that are found locally and seasonally. So if you were telling me you lived in the tropics and you wanted to drink some coconut water every single day, I would say kudos to you. Go for it. That's your perfect source of hydration right there. But me in Michigan, probably not the best option.
Got it. And okay, so you're doing the minerals. What else do you take? Any other vitamins, supplements that are really awesome?
The only other supplements that I've been taking periodically, I pulse them, are Shilajit. I do love Shilajit, which is this resinous substance that the place I get it from sources it from the Altai Mountains. And this resinous.
How do we spell that? Because I got to go Google that now.
Shilajit, Shilajit. It's known as like basically, liquid for the warriors, if you will, from traditional usages of it. And so it's got some adaptogenic qualities to it, but it's also full of, again, earth-based minerals. So it's got the full, so I like to take the ocean-based minerals with the quinton and then the earth-based minerals with the Shilajit. And the Shilajit also has fulvic and humic acids, which are natural chelators and binders because we're all exposed to toxins. And then also it has something called C60. Which is like this carbon molecule that's basically 60 carbons interlinked into like what looks like a soccer ball. And it's just free electrons to donate to the body. There's tons of really cool research on longevity in C60 if you're interested.
Read about. I'm taking some NAD and NMN. Are you doing any of those?
No, I recycle my NAD because I really make sure I get good sleep and have really good quality melatonin production. We kind of recycle that with that. And so I don't typically do anything exogenous with NMN or NR.
Is it bad?
I'm not going to say it's bad. I mean, I love David Sinclair's work. There's a ton of very interesting information on it, but I prefer that if my body makes it, I want to optimize those pathways before I take it.
That's true. I was thinking that perhaps when you take it exogenously, you're going to stop it's like a negative feedback pathway. You're getting it. So why do you make it? Yeah. So maybe
again, that's yet. And I don't know if it's going to actually be a complete negative feedback and like completely shut it off, but there's just too much wiggle, like just too much unknown in there for me to go down that route.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've got Shilajit and quinton and what else?
I love red light therapy. I love red light therapy, right? I think it can be a game changer for people. I still think sunlight is best, right? Like not necessarily full body all the time, but I want people to go outside, set their circadian rhythm, get all of the benefits of being in natural light. But in terms of like a device inside a red light therapy panel, there's a great red light therapy panel. I love them. There's a ton of benefit from, like you mentioned before, with the mitochondria to the collagen to reducing pain and inflammation.
Red light panel do you love?
I love this one, and it's just come on the market. One of a long time kind of quantum, I would call her quantum enthusiast, has taken a long time to curate this and to test it out. Her name is Kelly Bento from Soleil Well. And she only accepts orders if you email her, kbento@soleilwell.com. She wants to talk to you first, make sure you know how to use her panel, the benefits of it, what would be best for you. But her panel and her, she's got a flashlight, a torch, which is, I've seen it literally melt pain away and inflammation away within 3 minutes. Like pretty darn intense. I know. It's a really cool one. I'm also using it for like my anti-aging techniques too, Dr. K, no joke. So like, I think that there's that application as well.
I can't wait to talk to you about like injecting hyaluronic gel filler into people's faces, because that draws 1,000 times its water weight into the skin.
Right.
I'm just wondering how that disrupts lymphatic drainage and all the things. Like
hyaluronic acid is better than a lot of those other fillers, as long as you can get like really purified hyaluronic acid, because that is actually a substance that the fasciocytes make on their own, right? Yes. And so they make it in response typically to what we would call compression and shearing, you know, so like holding, like if anyone who's ever had a knot melt away from a massage therapist, that's what we're talking about, like that compression. And then that melting of the knot is because those fasciocytes are making this hyaluronic acid and pulling fresh water like into that area. And so I haven't dove down the filler strategy a ton, like into those deep dives of those sciences, but hyaluronic acid is a natural substance. So I would say it's a way better option than a lot of the other ones out there.
Definitely. Just as long as you see a great injector.
You're the expert on that. That's for sure.
That's the case. So going outdoors, so the sunlight affecting your mitochondrial health, let's talk a little bit about that. Definitely, I believe in grounding, putting my bare feet on the earth and the grass and in the sand, whatever you can do. But what's the science behind how your melatonin changes when you're out and you're resetting your circadian rhythms?
Sure. So like at night, everyone knows melatonin increases at night, and it increases to put us to bed and to kind of keep us asleep and run a bunch of repair and anti-aging programs when we are asleep. And then there quote unquote should be a really sharp drop in melatonin come daylight time. We typically wake up feeling a little bit groggy maybe, but we're designed then to pretty quickly see dawn and start to see sunrise light. And as soon as the sun breaks the horizon, that's actually when blue light from the sun, that color wavelength of light from the sun, starts to appear in an intense enough amount or a big enough amount and intensity to shut down the melatonin and raise cortisol. It really kickstarts those different hypothalamic pituitary pathways like the HPA axis and the cortisol production, some steroid hormones. And so when we're outside and when we're getting those natural light signals, those changes and those progressions in the light, it starts to tell the melatonin to go away and for us to rev up the energy pathways, because we want a cortisol surge in the morning. That's really what kind of gets us up and rolling. A little later on in the morning, when the sun gets a little higher above the horizon, about 10 degrees above the horizon, that's ultraviolet A light. That interacts with our brain to optimize neurotransmitter pathways. So that's going to optimize things like serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine and epinephrine and these neurotransmitters that are really, were designed to then get that wavelength of light and then be focused and energized and motivated and enjoy our day. And so that's really when what really got me going into this, for my own personal health journey, was getting outside in that morning light and very quickly noticing those changes. Wow. Instead of fatigue, I do have the energy. Wow. Instead of brain fog and low motivation, I really feel focused and motivated. And so it's truly the interaction of the light with our eyes, naked eyes. I don't wear these when I'm outside, naked eyes. That allows us to really facilitate those things.
And those are your blue light glasses that you're wearing.
These are my blue light glasses for indoors. I don't have artificial light, but I got closed windows. I got a computer screen. I've got like a little light coming from this microphone, right?
And are you wearing those all day long, basically?
I don't stay in front of my computer all day long. So anytime I am in front of this screen, yes. But if I'm picking up my kids from school, if I'm going on a walk, if I'm running an errand that during the day, no, I won't. Like, I'm just, I like to have my naked eyes, sunroof open, windows down as much as possible to get that natural light.
And you talk about how our master sex hormone, the pregnenolone, is made inside the inner membrane of the mitochondria in response to morning light. And so morning light can actually improve libido and sexuality and sex hormone function.
And absolutely.
Then, yeah. And if you don't get it, you can get more sex hormone function diverted into cortisol stress.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. And so what we have happen is that pathway that makes the cortisol, that cortisol was first pregnenolone. And that pregnenolone is made typically either in the adrenal glands or in the reproductive organs. And then that pregnenolone, based on what my body perceives my needs are for the day, what stressful situation is Carrie in, where is she in her monthly cycle, right? Those sorts of things. My body can take that pregnenolone and make some of it into cortisol to rev me up for the day and make the rest of it into all of my steroid hormones to either improve libido, improve potentially implantation, right? If I wanted to get pregnant, like all of those things get start off as that pregnenolone from the mitochondria in response to morning light. So the mitochondria really are trying to key in on what time of day it is, so they know when to make that pregnenolone and then what the body needs to do with that pregnenolone.
So interesting. And how does thyroid hormone tie into that? Because that's also epidemic that everybody's hypothyroid, not enough thyroid. And yeah.
Oh gosh, that's such an interesting topic in and of itself. One of the things that I think most people are missing out on is the fact that those pathways that I was talking about before that stimulate the neurotransmitters also really stimulates the thyroid hormone production. Mm-hmm. And so we want that healthy surge of cortisol in the morning. When we don't get that, that's a stressor to the body. Anytime the body perceives a stressor, it really starts to down-regulate thyroid first, right? Basically, it says, let's hunker down. So always missing that morning light signaling there can really start to drive more of a hypothyroid phenotype. Then we have that UVA light, again, a little further in the morning, that UVA light comes. And if we're missing out on that, you're really not optimizing thyroid conversion of T3 and T4. Like that really gets optimized in that window because the body knows, okay, Carrie's awake. What's her stress load like? What's she doing with fertility? Okay, let's optimize all the other metabolic parameters for the rest of the day based on that. And it's easy to see when you realize how intimately the thyroid and metabolism is tied to light signaling, why we have this epidemic of hypothyroidism and just chronic fatigue in general.
It's so true. And then I think the blue light that this generation in particular is combating is so overwhelming. And there have been some studies published that talk about artificial light at night and cancer. Like a global study that showed that all forms of cancer, lung, breast, colorectal, and prostate, were boosted in people that had all this nighttime artificial light exposure on our screens, like me, every single night on my stupid screen. What do we do? What is this society going to do? Today, actually, France said they were withdrawing iPhone 12s because there's too much EMF radiation coming out of iPhone 12 Apple phones.
No, I saw that. I was happy to hear that because if we can start to, we need to educate, right? A lot of people don't know that light can be harmful. We just think light lights up our space and lets us see things. We don't think that somehow the light we're viewing is causing us harm. Mm-hmm. And so I really think that this is like a grassroots education that has to happen. And more people are perceiving in their bodies just like, at younger and younger, you know, I used to teach college courses and it was younger and younger that I used to hear depression, anxiety, insomnia, you know, just pain, random pain. And so I think people are realizing like, wait a second, what gives and what's shifted? And the big thing that's popped into people's brain was exactly what you said, the screen time. And so then that begs the question, well, what does that light do to us? Why is it causing these issues? And it's really, it's what's really damaging with the artificial light is when we're looking at it without any eye protection. Like I wear my orange ones after sunset or when it starts to get dark out. When it's really most detrimental is at night. And that's because of the fact that that blue light is it's a very intense wavelength of blue. It would mimic the same intense wavelength of blue we would be getting sometime in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. And so as my body has been awake and I'm going through like my day 13, 14, 15 hours, my body is anticipating a rest period because that's what I've evolved to anticipate. And so my body is starting to say, let's rev up melatonin. Let's start to elevate that, make Carrie sleepy and tired so that she can fall asleep. But as soon as my eyes see that bright blue, melatonin starts to tank. It gets completely suppressed. And in its place, we start to rev up actually all of those hormone pathways, those steroid hormone pathways that we were talking about in the morning, because the brain basically thinks the morning has started again. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine? That's why we're seeing estrogen dominance. That's why we're seeing so many of these hormonally driven cancers on the rise, like just drastically on the rise, because of the fact that we're really dysregulating hormone balance with this artificial light at night. And then not to mention, there's a big connection between we're getting delayed sleep. So we're not sleeping in conjunction with when our body is trying to release the other repair hormones like human growth hormone. And so then we're waking up in a state where our body is not as repaired as it could be. That's just facilitating more and more inflammatory conditions, more and more tissue degeneration that, you know, then that can get diagnosed as anything depending on where it's happening in the body. But a lot of it stems from the fact that we're looking at the wrong light at night.
Yeah, so interesting. I think that it contributes immensely to adolescents and adults having depression, obesity, irregular sleep. Sleep being so, so important. Are there things we can do besides wearing blue light blockers and just turning off the TV and like trying to get back to reading by candlelight? Because I don't know if that's going to ever happen anymore.
You know, I don't know if that's ever going to happen anymore. You're right. But I have seen both in my own life, but also clinically time and time again, getting a pair of orange toned blue blockers, as ugly as it looks for some of these companies.
Cute.
Oh, thank you. Some of these companies, like, I mean, it's not the prettiest, right? It does the job because that orange film over the lenses, it basically blocks the blue light from penetrating through and entering my eyes. And so it's a shield. It's my blue light shield when I still want to watch that movie or that football game with my family, or when I still want to scroll on my phone. Now there's red screen technology. People can transform their iPhones to a red screen. You can get red toned apps that you can overlay on your Android. So we can mitigate the screens as well, but nothing really does the trick other than putting on those orange toned blue blockers that really solves a lot of people's issues with that blue light at night.
Interesting. On the opposite end of the spectrum, we're seeing influencers too who are out there sunning their perineums and like recommending no sunscreen at all. And, you know, that you should not take oral vitamin D, you should only get it externally. I think there's a spectrum. Sometimes that's too far on the wild side. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I absolutely do, right? Number one, I have started moving away from exogenous vitamin D supplementation, and except for some short therapeutic uses of them. And that's because it really is a hormone. And when we take it orally, we're only getting one version of it. We're only getting that D3 typically. And when we make it from sunlight striking the skin, we make a dozen metabolites that are starting to trickle into the research as being very biologically important and useful to have in this balanced amount based on the sunlight exposure. And so I do prefer to make it with sunlight. But that being said, you do not have to lay out all day for hours on end to make adequate amounts of it by any means. And so I really encourage people to have what I would call a balanced relationship with direct light sunlight exposure, and not to override their body's built-in signals that they've had too much. What could that be? Well, that your skin could start to feel really hot. It could start to pinken more than your natural tone. I don't want to call them warning signs, but I'll call them signals that you've been in the sun too much. At which point you can still get the so many of these benefits that I described sitting in the shade, mm-hmm. putting a big old hat on. Like my go-to strategy is when I've sunned my body enough, mm-hmm. I have my nice long sleeve shirts or my cover-ups and my sun hat, right? You know, I've got my cute sun hat now, that I feel like really allows me to stay outside and enjoy the light without overdoing it. Because the other end of the spectrum, Dr. K, that a lot of people in my quantum health space don't talk about is the fact that UV light can destroy collagen, right? Yeah. And I don't just view collagen. I of course, I want to maintain youthful collagen, right? But I also view collagen as this communication network throughout the body. It's this interconnected system. I don't want to destroy the system, right? If this is communication, that's important for my body. And so I do feel like people need to strike a healthy balance with it. And you don't necessarily have to send your privates all day long to get that.
That is so true. And yeah, we need our collagen. We need our lymphatic blood supply and blood flow. And I read one of your posts about blood flow and lymph flow using sunlight. I found this so fascinating because lymphatic circulation can be so sluggish sometimes. What are the ways that we can improve our lymphatic drainage?
That's great questions. Now, number one, like I do think the old school, I'm going to call it old school, method of rebounding. I love movement and rebound. I think the lymphatic system does respond to that type of movement. Even I've got clients who love their vibration plates and things like that. But from the mechanistic understanding of lymph flow and blood flow, that exclusion zone water that we were talking about earlier plays a key role here. And that's because all of these vessels that are the lymphatic vessels and the blood vessels are lined with exclusion zone water, or they should be lined with this exclusion zone water. Mm-hmm. And what happens then is that this exclusion zone water in and of itself helps the liquid that's flowing through it to flow autonomously. Such cool research, right? Where they actually take these tubes that mimic that same exact setup of the blood vessels or the lymphatic vessels, and they place them horizontally in a bath of water. And yeah. without any stimulus, the water just starts to flow naturally from one end to the other, and it flows perpetually as mm-hmm. long as there's light in the environment. Because that infrared light, right, or that red and infrared wavelengths of light is what helps keep that exclusion zone water and keep the flow. And so lymph stagnation these days, or even sluggish blood flow, has a lot to do with the fact that our indoor environments are very infrared deficient. We block it from the windows for energy efficiency. We omit it from the lights for energy efficiency. But the body is really designed to want to soak in sources of infrared to optimize things, especially like the blood flow and the lymphatic flow and drainage.
Well, you wonder what used to happen in the pioneers' days. I mean, you had a log cabin with one window, and it was probably dark with, candlelight, but maybe you were out in the field all day anyway with your cattle and whatnot. So, right. I mean, I think looking back at caveman strategy of, you know, being outdoors and going out when it's quiet at sunrise, sunset, seems like we need to go back to that.
We kind of have to just go back to that. Yeah, we have to recognize that while we have been able to really create a very different environment as a human species, it's not necessarily optimized for us to live in and be indoors at all times.
So true. I mean, I definitely remember having moments during the shutdown and the pandemic where we were all up till like 2 a.m. scrolling on TikTok and feeling very unhealthy about it. And yet feeling so dopamine addicted.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the lights on all night long in the whole house and everybody in their bed with blue light on their faces. So I think we all went through that and felt the toxicity of it. It's so fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. What are you eating that you think is super great for your diet?
You know what I'm eating? What I've been starting. Well, this isn't necessarily diet. This I've been eating black sesame tahini.
Oh yeah.
Because I love sesame, but number one, but number two, I've done some research into the melanin pigmentation in that, and that it has a history in traditional Chinese medicine. Like there's this materia medica of traditional Chinese medicine that says if you take this for 100 days straight, it can cure anything. And I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. Let's kind of test this out.
What day are you on? Are you on day 30 or what?
I think I'm probably on day 27 or something like that. Yeah, close to it. So 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks. But yeah, so that's one of the things. I'm also a big fan. I feel so good starting my day off with breakfast and with a pretty protein rich breakfast. You know, I try to source my stuff as best as possible, you know, farm down the street, that a farmer's market, that sort of stuff. So lately I've been really loving eggs in the morning. So I'll have a few eggs in the morning. I'll typically cut up maybe some onions and garlic and mushrooms in there. And just to start my day off with a really good protein rich breakfast, it puts my body in a state of safety. It's like, okay, we know what time of day it is because Carrie just told us with her eyes when she went outside. And now we know that there's food in Carrie's environment and we don't have to stress out about hunting and gathering and finding and preparing and all that stuff. And so it just feels like such a really, really good way for me to start my day. And I've been doing it. I've been doing that. I used to be a breakfast skipper, intermittent fasting style. I used to do that for 3 or 4 years. And I noticed not great results towards the end of that. And so breakfast eating has been a game changer for me.
That's interesting you say that. I love intermittent fasting and I've done it for a few years too, but I also sometimes feel it's hard to sustain. But that goes against all of the teachings about hormesis, which means we want to stress our body and we want to get rid of senescent cells and do all those things that create autophagy. So what do you
and
say?
I do that still, right? But I intermittent fast the other way, right? So just, you know, just a few days, right? Yeah, just a few days ago, it was a 24-hour breakfast to breakfast. And so I basically can kind of take the stress out of my body because I've given it that nourishment. There's really isn't a lot of cortisol dysregulation. I see what I noticed in myself and what I've noticed in clients who are long-term intermittent fasters is that cortisol becomes dysregulated for them as they continue to, because it becomes easier and easier to delay. Now it's 2 o'clock that I'm starting my window. Yeah. Now it's 3 o'clock. Right? And so I have found that you can really mitigate that by doing the breakfast to breakfast or maybe even breakfast to lunch to get a little bit of a longer one, but not the consistent like 2 p.m. meal start that I was doing originally.
So you'll have your breakfast and then you won't eat again till the next breakfast?
Well, that's if I'm going to do a 24-hour fast, that's how I do it. But I throw that in a couple times a month, 3 times a month, you know, nothing crazy. And then I typically eat within an early fueling window. So breakfast till about 8 to 10 hours later. And I have distinct meals, right? I used to be a grazer and that used to make me, I made myself hangry and pretty darn close to insulin resistant at that point. Mm-hmm. So now it's just like maybe like 2 or 3 distinct meals in that window of time. And that's that.
Good. I do notice that too. When I eat early, heavier meals early and then stop like around 5 p.m. and then you wake up really great the next morning. I think that processing time when you're fasting at night is so restorative because all the restoration systems turn on in the body.
So agreed. Absolutely.
Good. There's so much interesting stuff that you're teaching us. I love it. I never realized that water had patterns, the study of symmetrics and how sound vibrations change the beautiful organization of the molecules, the way that snowflakes have patterns and that water itself has patterns. Can you talk about that? And should I be doing sound baths all the time?
Well, I mean, they are really healing, right? They absolutely are. And it's because of that. It's because we grew up in, or we evolved, or we for an extended period of human history, we were in nature and nature's beautiful sounds. So that would be bird song. It would just be the wind blowing through the trees or the waves or, you know, the babbling brook. And so it turns out that water is a receiver of that as information. And what water does with that information, the frequencies, is it can organize itself into geometries like you were talking about. And it wasn't until I was also studying that those patterned geometries in water, those cymatics, that I realized that my frequency environment really matters. My sound environment really matters because if I've got this water inside of me and this water is constantly kind of tuning into these sounds and or either organizing itself into a very beautiful, coherent geometry, or when there's a sound that there are like a frequency that really doesn't resonate with the water, you'll see it in cymatics, it kind of looks like a blob, right? It doesn't look very organized at all. And the name of the game when it comes to quantum biology really is this word called coherence. how am I continuing to add energy and information to the body to strengthen its just this, its unifying communication? Am I adding things that make it feel like it's safe and organized and energetically satisfied? And so that's where this idea of cymatics and frequency comes in. And then we just compare that to the fact that, you know, got traffic running by my office and I've got the wireless radiation all around me and I can't necessarily hear it, but there's electricity running through my walls and there's people who can hear these things and they say it sounds horrible. As opposed to like what the environment was designed, the coherent environment I was designed to be in. So it's just another aspect of we've gotten really far, far away from nature and what our body wants and craves, the energy it craves, mm-hmm. and we can get it back. We just have to recognize that it's an important thing.
That's so interesting. I think in surgery, in the operating room, I play music all the time. I play music and I just feel like it puts me in this mindset and headspace, and there's gotta be something to it because patients do better when there's music played in the operating room. Who knows if their blood flow and their easy water is running better and their inflammatory molecules are less, but I really feel like it's gotta be music. It's gotta be good and upbeat, not sad and somber, but love this concept because I think when we're meditating, when we're making that like an ohm noise and the resonance that you're driving through your body, it's all so interconnected. Truly,
it is. It's, and what you want to know, the other thing that you're talking about with that is that sound in that operating room, there's research that showed that sound, when it's in that kind of what would be a subjectively very pleasing sound, can actually improve oxygen binding to hemoglobin. I mean, so amazing, right? Yeah. So yeah. It's like, so yeah, I'm certain you're doing things to benefit you and your performance and then the recovery of the individual, all those things. That's just so great to hear. And that ohm, when self-produced sounds have been shown to increase our body's own melatonin production. Mm-hmm. And it's not the pineal melatonin that I'm talking about. It's the melatonin we make inside of every cell mm-hmm. all day long that's actually helps to clear up the metabolic damage we make all day long. So if we can find these like sounds or these chants or even singing a nice happy song can do these things. They can really help to stimulate our body's own melatonin production.
This is why singing makes you feel happy. Or this is kind of that concept of when you go to a concert and you have all these voices and this human energy around you, it feels different, doesn't it? So
absolutely. Yeah. That's not just, you know, anecdotal or anything. There's really truly a lot of biological things that are changing in that environment.
Well, it's very eye-opening. The concept that you brought to your thinking is, like you said, very much like we have to treat ourselves like plants, get our nourishment from the earth, get the water that's got the proper frequencies coming into us, and let the chlorophyll, like our own mitochondria, which are like our cells' chlorophyll, absorb the sunlight energy.
And 100%.
Yeah. And so I think that kind of thinking is going to make all of us so much healthier. I'm so,
I hope so. Yeah, I really hope so. Dr. K, I've been loving this chat. This is such a fun chat with you. I could chat all day. And I just, what I love about this stuff is it, to me, when I learned it, it felt doable, right? Yeah. It didn't feel like this intense cleanse or anything I had to do. And so I really hope people are encouraged to start to incorporate this stuff.
Yeah. And it's so fun because the simplest things that we do, like one of my favorite vacations we do as a family is go to Lake Arrowhead, and there's not much Wi-Fi. We're outdoors all day long and we're walking barefoot in the grass. And like those simple things, I come back feeling so healthy from that dose of sun and nature. And so I'm going to do more of that this year for sure. In aesthetics, we have one other concept, which I wanted to ask you about, this concept that there's some molecules that we use in our injectables and biostimulators. They turn on collagen production, and some of them are very spherical and round, like our calcium, it's a calcium hydroxyapatite is supposed to be inert and very spherical. And then there's some like PLLA, which is another biostimulator, which has very sharp jagged edges. And so it's interesting because the literature coming out is now showing some evidence that the jagged irregular ones maybe create more inflammatory change. Do you have any thoughts on that, spherical versus jagged molecules, inflammation?
Yeah, that goes into a whole topic called biogeometry, where spherical molecules have a centering energy, and that centering energy pulls in what the ancients would call prana. We might call it, you know, a quantum field energy, etheric energy, and that has a harmonizing effect for sure. I have not looked into any of the molecules that you're talking about, but it would make sense. If I were a guessing person, I would guess that there'd be one that would be a lot more harmonizing and energetically favorable than the other.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to study more about that. But that's like kind of being brought up and discussed in our industry a little bit. So I kind of like to learn the inorganic chemistry around it.
Fascinating.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think you are so amazing. I've so enjoyed this conversation, and I definitely invite you to LA. I want to learn so much more from you. I love the fact that you're a scientist, because sometimes people out there in the biohacking community are off the wall and have no scientific experience or understanding, but you, my friend, you're a girl who knows the Krebs cycle still.
I do. That's right. I love learning that stuff.
Mitochondrial ATP cycle that we need to feel energized. So where can people find you on the gram? I'd love to for you to shout out your handles and any interesting projects that you have coming up.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. That really is my hub for kind of trickling this information out to everyone. So that's called Carrie B Wellness on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You can also go to carriebwellness.com and check out all the courses I've recorded. You can sign up for my circadian starter kit, which is really just it's free, but jam packed full of everything I'm talking about with light. I really want to get this message about light to people and optimizing their light environment. I teach their practitioner certification program as well. So you can get more information there. Let's just spread this message, because I think that this could be really a game changer for so many people.
I think so. Human health needs the basics: sunlight, good water, good earth.
Exactly.
Amazing supplements. I have so much research to do now, more and more. That's it for now, guys. I thought this was so interesting. We are going to learn more and more about all of these concepts this year on the podcast. I love the focus on longevity, anti-aging. You can find me on the gram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find my amazing skincare line. I'm going to send you some of my Deep Blue Hydration Serum, which is going to bring great water content to your skin. It absorbs 1,000 times its water weight. It's fractionated. It kind of penetrates, and it gives you a dewy, pretty finish. And some vitamin C serum for no photo damage.
Oh my goodness. That's so cool.
You're going to love it. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to check out Carrie's page. Love you, and go get yourself in the sun.